This is The Conversation. It's episode 136 with Shara Hughes, Brooklyn-based painter, attender of numerous residencies, and single and dating galleries of various sorts. I'm Michael Shaw. The website for this podcast is theconversationpod.com, where you can see images of the various studios that Shara's been working in, including in Atlanta, New York, Fisher's Island, Denmark. So go check those out. I am really lucky, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word. I'm grateful to be putting this episode out as I am, as it is coming out, because I had a bit of a scare when, without getting into too much detail, it appeared that the project file for the main audio that we did was lost and disappeared. So I was on the verge of emailing Shara and saying, are you okay if we record again for just like a half hour or so? But thankfully, the file was recovered, and that's what you're about to hear. So I don't know what the moral of that little tidbit is, but I will let you do your own math on that. But maybe it falls under the category of, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be, or not. Our last episode, 135, with LA-based painter Max Maslansky, is one of the best episodes, along with co-host Deb Cloudman. I highly recommend that one. And there's a bonus episode for supporters of the show. So if you have not gotten yours yet and you've been a supporter of the show, do let me know. That's about it before we talk to Shara, other than, do me a favor, give me a couple minutes on the back end. I just wanted to let you know about a couple of things real quick. Thank you so much for being here, and I appreciate your listening. I will talk to you on the back end. The way that I always like to start is by, especially with people in New York, is asking where you are.
I'm in Greenpoint. So I'm actually currently at my house and not my studio, but my studio is also in Greenpoint.
Okay. And so since Williamsburg, adjacent Williamsburg, is such a charged name for such a charged place, you know, in terms of topics of conversation, where does Greenpoint rank in that particular context right now, would you say?
I mean, I feel like people started talking about Greenpoint when, you know, Girls, that HBO show, came out.
I think right.
Most of it was, like, filmed here. So I feel like it got kind of more popular because of that. But now I think it's pretty expensive, I think. Like, not as expensive as Williamsburg, but it's, like, getting there. But we actually got a really great deal on a studio, or I got a great deal on the studio through a friend before I moved up here from Atlanta. And so I just got kind of lucky. So then I wanted to live close to the studio. So that's sort of why I ended up in Greenpoint. And the rate that we got is like better than a lot of studios that are like further out too. So, I mean, I always liked Greenpoint, but my main thing was like, I want to be close to the studio, and the studio needs to be like pretty reasonable price.
Yeah, right. Which is to say below market, more or less?
Yeah.
Right.
I would think so.
Yeah.
So, and then also, like, we know everyone on the, I know everyone on the floor of our building. So it's like we're all in the same art conversation, so to speak. So, like, we all kind of have similar likes, and it's not like some huge studio building with 500 people in it.
Right.
So yeah. It's kind of nice.
You make it sound like they're kind of your peers. Is that kind of what you're?
Yeah. 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 Exactly. So the lady that actually got the floor sort of curated who she wanted to be in the spaces with us. So so it worked out really well, and it's one of those places where we all know each other, but at the same time, everyone is pretty serious about working hard. So it's not like hanging out all the time and trying to like, you know, be too social. So like everyone's a little bit older, so it doesn't really have that feel of like a school type setting or grad school setting, which I feel like some studio buildings can get like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been pretty good. And I've been there for about almost 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Not too long, but
yeah, that's a good description of kind of the ideal studio setup, because I know that if you're in a studio building where there aren't many peers, you know, or you're working like on a Sunday and nobody else is around, that it feels a little lonely. But on the other hand, you don't want to be in, you know, the either grad school or the sort of massive studio situation where people are coming by and chatting, and it's like before you know it, you've spent maybe more than half of your working time allotted for conversation instead of work.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's been pretty good in that vein. But you know, as with everything, you know, I'm sure it'll change. Just because it's New York, buildings get sold, and you know, things have to move on, but hopefully it'll stay around in this studio building for at least a couple more years.
Well, that woman who you, the colleague you mentioned who got the space and curated in the studio mates, she's just the subleaser. She's not the the owner, right?
Right. Yeah. So she has like I think it's a 5-year lease. It's not more than that. So for sure it should be 5 years.
Well, what is the sense of the landlord and the landlord's attitude about the space, as far as you can tell?
Well, I'm not really sure, because the floor below us moved out, and so she was the lady that we're dealing with. She tried to get that floor below us, and they've already doubled the price.
Mm.
So that didn't work, obviously. Yeah. But it made us all obviously kind of nervous to know that, like, you know, just a year and a half ago, it was this price that we've got now.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah, so when you say things might change, you know from what you are. You're referring to something rather specific.
Yeah. I mean, you just, all the time, there's like 3 buildings in Gowanus that just got sold, and so all the artists in there have to find a new place. It's just like, you hear about this stuff all the time.
Yep, right. So, exactly.
So it's just like, don't get too comfortable.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's a good catchphrase for artists in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we get into the winding path that you've had? You've been in Brooklyn/New York now for a couple years, and you were in Atlanta before that?
Yeah. So I was I moved here in 2014 in August. And then before that, I was living in Atlanta for almost 5.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But while I was there, I was kind of traveling around a bunch and not totally there for a full 5.5 years. So I'd go to residencies and such like that, or I'd come up to New York and stay here for the summer. You know, so it was actually nice for me to be there, although I moved to Atlanta from New York, you know, what is that, like 7-8 years ago? To kind of deal with the family thing. My whole family's there. And then I just found a really great cheap loft there and knew that I could live in Atlanta for cheap and, you know, go to residencies all the time from there. So it kind of made sense to, at that time, to use that kind of as just sort of like a place to come home to, but then know that, you know, until I moved back to New York, I was just kind of using that as a place to go where I can go to residencies and travel around and not have to be like, what do I do about rent? And what do I do about, you know, living in New York is tough enough. So, I knew that when I was going to move here again, that I wouldn't be having that luxury of being able to travel around as much.
Right. So When you mentioned being in Atlanta in a loft, was that in a neighborhood that a particular neighborhood that's artist friendly or artist oriented?
There were some artists in the building. I'm not really sure where an artist neighborhood would be in Atlanta.
Okay.
There's more like musically inclined areas, but it's super spread out. There's, you know, you have to have a car to drive everywhere. There's not really good transportation. So,
right.
You know, it's hard to even like look for, hey, I'm looking for a studio. You kind of have to like make it in your garage or in a loft where you have like an extra big room or, you know, it's one big open space kind of thing.
Right.
So, Atlanta was tricky in that way.
Well, I was just going to say, well, how would you describe the neighborhood? In other words, was it a very urban downtown-ish kind of neighborhood, or was it a little bit more, you know what I mean?
Yeah, mm-hmm. More of an urban downtown-ish kind of place.
Right.
It was a little bit east of Atlanta, so it was an area where you could walk to restaurants, and they had, during my time there, they had built this, like, Beltline that actually then connected some of the neighborhoods, which you could use for, you know, biking everywhere. So it was really great in that way. Cause when I had grew up in Atlanta, I was not in a place where you could walk anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice. I really enjoyed it, but then like I went back a month ago and now the place where I was living is like triple the price and everything around it is totally different. So it just is like, you know, over a couple of years, you know,
wow.
Something that I probably wouldn't be able to stay in the place in the loft that I was in then right now. It's like New York prices.
I don't want to project my own feelings onto yours, but I mean, that's got to be really kind of almost oppressive that, you know, you're in a place where the threat of being pushed out, you know, is so overwhelming. And the place that you were, that you kind of would almost, wouldn't imagine would be, have that kind of pressure, has turned almost into that kind of place. It's like they're going through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really, it was crazy. I went and drove back down around, I still have some friends that live over there. And drove back around there last time I was home, and I was like, I don't even recognize this place. The Beltline that I was talking about was an old ripped up train tracks when I was living there, and it was like really fun. You could kind of walk around and explore, and it was great when they put that in. But you know, 1-2 years later, it's, you know, you can't live around there anymore, kind of thing. So it's like, okay, you know, it's really nice for the people that are moving in there, but because they feel like, you know, okay, coming from like having more money and being able to move down there, they feel like kind of cool and hip. But then all like the cool hip people have to move out. So, you know, I guess that's how it goes. But it was a little disappointing to go back and have it be totally not what it was when I was there.
Is your sense that it's a case of a particular neighborhood becoming particularly hot and hip, kind of like Williamsburg did many years ago? Or is it maybe more of just the larger gentrification around the country in urban areas?
Probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Like there were some developers that got a hold of a super old building that had been abandoned for a long time right next to my old building. And they turned it into this huge market based off of the Chelsea Market in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, tons of food places, tons of fancy restaurants and fancy clothing stores, and then offices all up top kind of thing. So, and it's right on the Beltline, so people can move to a close neighborhood and bike to work, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Right.
Um, I feel like if I did move back to Atlanta, I'd still want to be over in that neighborhood or in that area, but I'd probably have to be like a little bit further out.
Yeah.
And that's probably something else that was like similar to what I had before, but.
And did you say that that area is even outside technically the city limits, or is it just kind of on the edge?
It is technically inside the city limits. Mm-hmm. I feel like I grew up a little bit outside of the city limits, and then my mom moved in town. And then when I moved back home a couple of years ago, I moved downtown.
Okay.
To that area.
Right. Right. Yeah. And because I had a listener and supporter of the show who got her MFA and moved to Alabama, where her family is for the time being. Mm-hmm. She was asking about Southern artists on the show. And I just want to use that as a way of introduction of preface,
yeah.
A preface of saying, to what extent is Atlanta the South? To what extent do you, if at all, feel Southern, et cetera?
Oh, Atlanta's totally the South. I actually, like, when I lived there, worked at a arts online magazine called Burnaway, and it covers all the arts in the South, in the Southeast, I guess. So I feel like in a way that it's like the central of the center of the South, but at the same time, I'll probably get like a lot of crap for that.
Right.
But I mean, I don't know. I feel like actually there's a really great art scene in Birmingham. In ways, maybe they're actually more ahead of Atlanta. Atlanta's like one of these cities that's totally changing all the time. And like, it's a lot of people come in and out and try to make it better in a lot of ways, but it's, for some reason, it hasn't caught on to be one of the bigger art cities.
Right.
It was really hard for me to be there. I actually had ended up having to get, like, I'd have shows in New York and in Europe and wherever all around. But I'd go back to Atlanta and I didn't really have a job in the arts there, because everyone who does want those jobs has those jobs and keeps them for forever.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So yep. I had to get a job at Whole Foods in the bakery department, and it was terrible.
Right.
So
let's
drive, set. Like, four.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted to. This is something that you mentioned when we spoke before, and I want to kind of set it up maybe in context, if that's okay.
Sure. Yeah.
Because I think you did that really well when we were speaking before. So I want to just back up and go back to your. Where was your undergrad?
Afterward. At RISD.
Okay, got it. So you were at art school, yeah. But not in grad school. And
yeah.
And I remember you saying that you got picked up right out of school.
Yeah, pretty much, like within a year or 2 years.
Right. And where was that?
Yeah. At Rivington Arms.
Rivington Arms. Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I actually I went to a residency right after RISD. And met this girl there who put me, we became really close friends. She lived in the city, in New York City, and then I went back to Atlanta, and she wanted to do a show in her apartment on Broadway. She was living downtown at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was like, no, it's too expensive to send work up there, you know. And I was like, oh, you never know what's going to happen. So actually, the girl ended up paying to send the piece up because she really wanted me in the show.
Right.
And it turned out that, like, she had the show in her apartment. It was really great. And one of her best friend's older sister ran Rivington Arms when it was still going. And so she came by and saw the show and was like, this work is great.
Mm.
And took my work to an art fair in Switzerland. And then it was like, you know, that's how I kind of got started.
Wow. Showing. Did that surprise you?
it was from an apartment gallery show. So it was like one of these like weird random ways to get picked up that feels kind of surreal. Like that stuff doesn't happen as much anymore.
Yeah.
It's like way harder, I think, now are way more competitive. I actually didn't even know what it was like back then. I was just sort of like, sure, I'll put a painting in your apartment.
Right.
Not expecting anything would happen from it.
Right. And that's usually when it does, or when it is more yeah. likely to anyway. Right. Right.
Yeah.
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 So take me through the period that led you to leave New York and go back down to Atlanta.
Okay. So when I was living here, I got an offer to do a show in Copenhagen. And the gallery there has this thing called a summer house up at the very northern part of Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, you know, why don't you just come over for the summer and make all the work for the show? It's cheaper for them to ship me over instead of all the work.
Right.
So I was like, totally. I would love to spend the summer in Denmark. So I kind of used that as an excuse to move out of New York at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved home to do that for the summer, and then ended up like staying after going to Denmark, going back to Atlanta and staying there and kind of hanging out with my family for a while, and then eventually finding that loft space a couple months later. Yeah.
Okay. So we're not getting to the to the sort of dramatic-ish part yet, but I guess I want to know if there was a period where you either were literally for a brief period, or you maybe had hoped or expected that you were going to be making a living, you know, in that earlier period of your work being shown.
Yeah. I mean, actually, like when I was, okay. So after art school, I moved home, went to a bunch of residencies for about, let's see, from 2004 to 2007. And during that time, I was showing with Rivington Arms, but I was still living in Atlanta.
Right.
And then I moved to New York in 07 and 08, just for about 8 months, and then got that opportunity to go to Denmark, and then moved back home to Atlanta, and then continued to still do these residencies, but just figured I just should, you know, stay in Atlanta. But during those years up until I moved back to Atlanta for the after New York, I was living off of my work pretty much.
Through Rivington Arms?
Through Rivington Arms. I think, yeah. And I mean, when I was in Atlanta before moving to New York in 07, I was living in my parents' house. And so I would be, you know, I was making all this work by going to residencies and then shipping it to the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I think I was also showing at a gallery in London. And they had eventually closed. But so I had two galleries I was working with and then living at home and doing these residencies, making all this work and kind of like developing for those 4 years before
right.
I was really having to pay any rent.
I see.
The first time I really had to pay rent was when I first moved to New York in 07.
And where did you move to when you moved to New York in 07?
Oh, I moved to Fort Greene.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then I had a studio in the Navy Yard down over near Fort Greene.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, like, I didn't really have many other people that I knew showing work. My friends weren't really showing at that time, so I felt like I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't really know how to be a part of the art scene then, so I feel like I was just kind of awkward here and like upset all the time. So I felt like after those 8 months, I was like, oh, you mean to go to Denmark? Sure. Peace out. I'm leaving. You know, I just felt like I was not in control of what I wanted to really do besides like with the work.
How do you, let's slow down for a second. How did you feel like you didn't know what you were doing? Particularly, I mean, first of all, just to preface it again, if you're just moving to New York for the first time, I mean, that's got to be a pretty universal experience for a lot of artists. But it sounds like you still maybe had a lot of momentum too. So where was it that, you know, the sort of cluelessness or the feeling out of sorts came in?
I guess it just, like, it happened over those, like, over, like, I think maybe the first couple months I lived here, I was like, okay, yeah, it's just because, like, it's hard to move to New York. But I think I just eventually just started to feel really lonely, and I felt sort of like I didn't have many friends that were all showing at that time, so I didn't really know how to be in the art world, and I didn't know, like, to what extent I should be, like, asking the gallery for help or for any kind of questions, or I don't know. I feel like I was just sort of, like, timid. I was confident with the work, but timid with, like, how to deal with it in the social context.
Right. Yeah, I get it. So what you're describing, just to mirror back to you for a second, is that you were, you already had this gallery, which is great, but the people, the friends, the colleagues, the artist colleagues that you had didn't have your even level of experience yet. So you couldn't really get any insight from them. And meanwhile, with your gallery, you were like, I don't want to bother them. You know, I don't want to sort of insert myself into,
like,
that community.
Am I doing okay? You know, and they're like, you're great. It's fine. Why are you, you know, but I just had no idea what I was, you know, because I got into it pretty quickly, that I was just sort of like, okay, this seems like it's good. But, you know, I was long distance. I was always in Atlanta or in a different residency. So I wasn't really, like, in the gallery when they were doing other openings or anything. So I never really knew if I was doing well compared to anyone else. I was just sort of like still doing my thing in Atlanta or somewhere else. So moving here, it was sort of like, okay, I didn't know what kind of expectations it would have been back then. Like, if I expected to be, like, more involved or what, but I guess I was just sort of like, I felt out of control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did you say earlier that kind of was making you a little depressed? Did I hear?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, like, I didn't, there's a point where, like, you have friends in the art world, but sometimes you're like, wait, are you really my friend, or are you just my friend because we're, like, colleagues kind of thing?
Yep.
And so I think I was going through a lot of that at the time, mm-hmm. and, like, not really knowing, like, who was going to, like, hang out with me outside of, like, a gallery setting kind of thing. So, which is, like, actually ongoing. But, you know, it was, like, the first time I've ever had that experience. Because at residencies, you're all just stuck there together. So you're like, well, we have to eat every meal together. Like, you know, they give you kind of like your set of friends for that 6 weeks that you're there, whatever. So in New York, it's just so much bigger that, I felt really like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I don't know who I can talk to. And I just felt out of control.
Can you list off the various residencies that you did?
Yeah, I did Vermont Studio Center 2 times. I did Anderson Ranch. Mm-hmm. I did Oxbow, and I did the Lighthouse work.
Mm-hmm.
Skowhegan and the Atlantic Center for the Arts.
Where's that?
That's in New Smyrna Beach.
Oh, okay.
In Florida.
Okay. And Skowhegan, just to clarify. Oh, I'm sorry. Before you go on, I was just going to say Skowhegan, just to clarify, is more of a sort of summer school than a residency. Is that correct?
Yeah. So they have, it's a little bit more competitive to get into because they have a faculty, of 5 artists that are also living there and working there, but going to your studios as well. And that's, like, part of the requirement, is that you have to have these studio visits with the faculty while you're there. So it is more of, like, they call it a school.
Are you, once you get in, you don't have to pay for it like the residencies? Or you do?
No, you do have to pay for it.
You do have to pay for it. Okay, yeah. Just wanted to clarify that. Okay. I'm sorry, and there was one more that you were about to mention, right?
Oh, I was just going to say that I spent 2 summers in Denmark.
Oh, wow.
Technically wasn't really a residency,
right.
But I was there to make work. So it felt like a solo residency to me.
Was it the same gallery both times?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, got it. So going back to being in New York and then sort of one of the reasons for my asking about the residencies is I assume you ran into your fellow residents in New York. And I just wonder if, you know, what that was like as far as, oh, you know, like a long lost pal kind of thing, or if it was, you know, if the context being in the city now had sort of changed that dynamic.
I feel like I'm still running into people from those residencies all the time, and some of them have become my closest friends. It is interesting to see who actually has stuck around and has, like, been more involved in the art world and who has kind of lost touch or not been as, like, aggressive. Not aggressive, but, like, as involved, maybe. Whenever I do see people outside of the residency here, it's exciting because you know what it's like to live with them for 3 to 6 weeks or 9 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
It's different from person to person, but there's a different kind of like click that I guess you could say, like whenever I see those kind of people, I'm like, oh, hey, you know. We like lived together during a really weird time in our life, or maybe it was a really great time or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right. Right. And when you say, I want to go back to what you said just a moment ago about recognizing that your fellow residents now in the city were, some were more, others less kind of involved, I think is the word that you used, you know, I kind of want to flesh that out a bit. I mean, is that something that a situation in which, you know, people are maybe separating themselves or lessening their commitment? Is that what that is like, or is it something a little bit different?
I feel like some people that I've met at the residencies have gone, you know, way further than where I am. And some people haven't gone like as far as like showing and being in museums or whatever, and some people are still kind of like trying to find a gallery to work with or trying to get a show somewhere or something. So I think it's on all levels, the people that I still run into. But there are people that I never see and probably will never see again, and maybe I've even forgotten who they are.
Right. So the people that you just mentioned who are trying to find galleries, are you empathetic or are you sympathetic with them and their situation?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, at any time you can get dropped or your gallery can close. So just because, like, if you do have representation, doesn't mean like, oh, sweet, like I've made it, you know?
Right.
It's so up and down that, like, you know, even if you make a painting sale or have a good year, it's like you just cannot take it for granted because there's no, like, level of, like, I've made it, you know?
Right.
At least, like, that's how I can't think about, like, feeling that way because it just doesn't make sense. Like, it changes so much, and your work changes so much, and you change. Like, it's so dependent on, like, who you are and how you're growing through your life is how the work goes. And so, like, there's, you know, you might be hot for, like, 2 years and then never have a show again kind of thing.
Right.
Or you may never have a show until you're, like, 60, and then you're all of a sudden, like, you know, the hottest person, you know, whatever. So it's just, it's just so like up and down that I feel like that could be you.
Right. And where has that perspective come for you? Because, you know, to put it in context, as we talked about at the beginning, you were showing within about a year of art school. And have been showing pretty consistently, it sounds like, since. So what have been the moments or events that have given you that kind of awareness?
Well, the gallery I've been showing with for 8 years closed last April.
Which one?
And so American Contemporary.
Okay.
Was in the Lower East Side.
And okay.
Before that, they were in London. So when I mentioned that I was showing with the London gallery that
right.
closed, it was them. They had moved from London to New York.
Mm.
And then, actually, like, right this past year has been the first time that I've ever been, like, single.
Right.
Since Rivington Arms picked me up, like, back in 2004, 2005.
Right.
So, to me, that came out of the blue. I did not think that he was going to close. But, you know, in thinking back, it's like, okay, you know, maybe it made sense for him to close, and maybe it's, you know, actually, like, maybe it made me move on to a better level with the art, and, you know,
yeah.
I can have different showing opportunities rather than, like, where I was with him, which I was happy, but sometimes things like that change, that kind of changes for, in a good way, although you can't really see it at the time kind of thing.
Right. Were you a little bit panicked when that gallery ended?
I don't know if it was like panic, but it was sort of like I had just moved to New York to kind of be closer to the gallery. So I was like, okay, well, just moved to New York and, you know, not that the work, just because they closed doesn't mean you're never going to sell again kind of thing. But like, I was like, I got to get another job kind of deal.
Yeah.
I would have had to get another one anyways, but, it just, there is a sense of security that gets lost when your gallery closes, because they might be able to take you to a fair or something like that, where you could, you know, maybe you're not having a show, but you're still selling like throughout the year or something like that.
Right.
I don't know. It also, like, in some ways, if you're represented by someone, you might not get asked to do certain shows, or you might not be approached by another gallery because they already know that you're
right.
taken in a way.
Right.
So,
how long were you single? I mean, because you, just to, for listeners, you just had a show, what, a month ago, right? So, and between that
yeah.
gallery closing and then this show that you just had, how long roughly would you say you were single?
Let's see. They closed, American Contemporary closed in April last year. And then that summer, during the summer, I was asked to do this show coming up, like this past, that was 2 months ago.
Right.
In February. So I kind of knew at least that I would have a show.
Yeah.
In the next year. But I still haven't, I'm still like technically unrepresented right now.
Mm.
I'm trying to figure that out at this time. So,
do you mind my asking how the show went?
Oh yeah, I mean it went well. I feel like it got I've never had a New York review or a review from a show I did in New York. So I got a couple of reviews that were really great for me to get just because I had never had that before. So
right.
I think that was exciting, and I think showing in a different space, a larger space, was exciting for me. So I think it went well, yeah.
But it's up in the air as far as whether they're going to represent you at this stage.
I have not made up my mind on... I'm having some conversations, basically, but I don't know what I'm going to do just yet.
Right.
And I don't know if I should be able to put it out in the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But we can say vaguely that you're dating and you have some promising prospects.
Yeah, I'm dating.
Is it exciting? Do you have all your moves in place?
I would say it's stressful.
Right, stressful more than exciting. Sure,
it's stressful because, well, in some ways, you're trying to predict the future. So you can, like, really overthink it, or you can just be, like, whatever feels the best.
Right.
Make that decision.
Right.
So in and everyone has an opinion, so I try not to talk to everyone.
Yeah, you anticipated what I was thinking, which was, you know, what's the right number of people to be getting advice from, you know, and do you have to be really selective about who you actually ask the question, you know, what do you think I should do?
Yeah. And I'm asked, people that I have been talking to are kind of people who are disconnected from, who know the world, but are sort of like either have left the art world or like are on a different level. And so it wouldn't be interfering with like any of their relationships for me to be getting advice from them, kind of thing. So
yeah, right.
I'm pretty selective about who I've been talking to, just because I want to be pretty honest with myself, and I don't want it to have any influence of like my friends being like, oh, they're like this, or this person's great and that person's the worst, you know? So
right.
I don't think that's fair.
That sounds really thoughtful to me, that you would recognize that asking colleagues about the situation and what to do would, I guess it's a little bit of a mark against them, but maybe I think that's just the glass half empty way of putting it. Maybe the glass half full way of putting it is that you recognize that when it comes to professional art career decision making, people can't get out of the way of their own biases.
Yeah, sure. And at the same time, like I can be easily like, if somebody's like, oh God, that person sucks, I'm like, oh, maybe they do, you know,
right.
I hadn't thought about it that way, you
right.
know, so
right.
maybe it's a mark against myself to being a little bit too like,
too persuasive.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. right.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds like a really, yeah, I mean, I think it's hard for me, and I imagine it's hard for people listening who are sort of hearing the scenario going, oh, that sounds so exciting, you know, you're having these conversations.
Yeah.
I think it's easy for us from the outside, you know, when it's somebody else's life to bypass the stressful element of it, you know, but I guess,
yeah,
you know, so.
It's so stressful.
Right.
And it's like, oh, you know, good problem to have kind of thing,
yeah,
oh, for me kind of deal,
right?
But you know, at the same time, it's like it can follow me into the studio where I like can't think about anything else, and so I get
right.
like kind of paralyzed, so I'm trying to like lessen up on thinking about it and just be like relax, like it's not like I can have some time, I don't need to decide like immediately kind of thing.
Yeah. You oddly made me just think of something that's going to sound really weirdly self-promotional, but the most recent episode of this podcast is with this LA-based painter named Max Maslansky, and he has this great description of what the right internal monologue is to be having when you're in the studio. So I'll just give you a quick takeaway instead of giving everybody a teaser who's not listened to it. But it's basically to kind of be focusing on the decision making and the procedures and processes of what the painting is that you're working on, you know, which is obviously for a lot of painters really hard to do because that you get into such a rhythm, you know, or it becomes so rote in a lot of cases.
Sure.
But that's basically, I mean, sort of the short and less complex version of what he said, as opposed to, you know, the internal monologues that we all have, which is, you know, negativity and you know, I'm this and that.
Yeah, I mean it's tricky what just pops into your head when you're working that you're like don't want to be there, or maybe you're in a point where you're working on something that's a little bit boring but you have to do it anyway, so
yeah.
You're that kind of stuff comes in,
right?
But it also depends on what kind of work you're making. Like my work's super related to what I'm going through at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I'm totally connected with them. So it kind of makes sense that I'd be thinking about it's hard for me not to think about my regular life because I'm sort of like drawing parallels, whether it's like really obvious or if it's more like internal stuff that comes out within the work. So in some ways I'm like, well, maybe it's fine for me to think about this stuff. It'll like get transformed into the work, kind of hippie stuff, you know?
I can't help but ask, going back to what you were talking about as far as perspective and advice and how to edit, you know, what you're going to take in. You live with your boyfriend, correct?
Yes.
What does he think about this, you know, dating that you're metaphorical dating that you're going through?
I mean, obviously I talked to him about it because we live together. But I mean, he has his ideas of which is better and which is worse.
Is he an artist?
Yes, he is.
Okay. So he has his biases too.
Yeah, yeah. So in some ways, like, I try not to talk about it too much because I think I can overthink it.
Right.
But, yeah, I think he has his ideas of what would be better or what he would do. But he's in a different position where maybe one place would be better for him but not good for me, kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
Which is, like, also why I try to, not get into it too much with certain people. Just because, a lot of it is about relationships and, like, their program or whatever. So it's who you like at the end of the day.
Right. I feel like we sort of arrived at this place in your life from a few years back, kind of much earlier in the conversation, but maybe it's a good place to sort of wind our way towards the end, as it were. When you were in, and this is, I guess this is also a way to ask about what your day job sort of situation has been, you know, throughout, because you did describe being at residencies, you know, essentially being a full-time professional artist by sort of not paying rent because you were living, stashing your stuff with your parents in Atlanta and then doing all these residencies and having a gallery as well. But at a certain point, when you were living in New York, or maybe even when you were living in Atlanta before that, you were working as well as making your work, right? So what has that kind of situation, and maybe you can sort of finish with the time when you wound up at Whole Foods.
Okay, yeah. So I think I kind of figured it out in a way to be able to make all the work and to go to these residencies by not having to pay rent and also by selling paintings every now and then for that time period after school, which was helpful just for like sheer development of the work. And I think when I moved back to Atlanta, I had lived there for a couple of years without really having to have a job. I don't think I had a job at all for the first, like, 2, maybe even 3 years.
Mm-hmm. So you're working full-time on your work.
Yeah. And I had, I don't blow the money whenever I get it. I'm kind of, you know, because I'm like, I want to stretch this out as long as I can not to have a job.
Right.
So I save it. But at some point, you know, you come to the end of that. And, you know, every year is not a great year. So I eventually had to figure out how to get a part-time job at least to live in Atlanta, which was weird because I figured I would be moving there so that I wouldn't have to work as much. But actually being in New York makes it easier to do better in a weird way because you're participating more and you can be in more group shows because you don't have to shift the work and you're just around more. People think about you more. You're on people's minds a little bit more.
Right.
And you're in the conversation.
Right.
So being in Atlanta, it's, you know, although I had like 2 museum shows when I was there, nothing was selling because I think the market in Atlanta is really hard to sell paintings that are like New York prices, maybe. So I was living there and I wasn't selling anything in Atlanta, which I was focusing on. Because I for me, I was like, oh, I just want to live in Atlanta. I don't want to move back to New York. So I eventually had to get a job at Whole Foods, and I was had to drive 45 minutes to get there, and I had to be there in the morning, so I was working in the bakery, and it was just driving me crazy. And I was making $10 an hour, and you know, I was like, why am I living in Atlanta outside of the art world and working at Whole Foods? Like, this doesn't make sense, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It
was the only job that you could kind of find down there at the time?
Well, it was like, I had worked for my friend's restaurant for a while. But I didn't like doing waitress job, and restaurant that he owned was like a late night restaurant, which was great. And, you know, tips were really good, but I had to get there at 10 PM and leave at 4 AM kind of thing.
Wow.
So, yeah. And I was like, I thought that was a good idea so I could make paintings during the day, but like, turns out it was not a good idea.
Yeah.
Cause I was just tired.
Right.
So I figured I'd get a job at Whole Foods for, I don't know why I thought that was a good idea. like, it wasn't. but maybe it was one of these like subconscious things that I kind of did to myself to be like, oh, look, I'm working at Whole Foods in Atlanta. Oh God, what am I doing? Like, to force myself to be like, all right, just like get it together and move to New York.
You needed to punish yourself to provoke yourself to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was partly some of it.
Mm, okay.
And for my friends, in New York to be like, what are you doing? Like,
I see.
Just get up here. You know?
Right. Right.
But during that time, I, was also coming to New York quite a bit and eventually met my boyfriend who was living here at the time. And so we were long distance for a while. And then he moved to Atlanta to be like, all right, you know, I'm moving you to New York.
Were you working at Whole Foods when, were you working at Whole Foods when he moved down there?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So
you were probably waking him up in the morning to go to work.
Yeah. No, yeah. He was like still working in New York from Atlanta because he does install. So he was like, live in Atlanta, fly to New York for a week, install shows, and then fly back to Atlanta.
Wow.
To live with me.
Right, right.
So it was like so stupid, you know? Like, I don't know. I was like, just wanted to, I don't know what I was hanging on to. But
right. I want to know what it's like having that much time in the studio. Again, this is something that we talked about with Max Meslansky as well, who, despite having a significant career leap after being in the Made in LA, you know, Hammer Biennial, kept his day job, but although he cut his hours quite a bit. But you, all that to sort of as a preface to say that you have been doing a lot of full-time working on your work. And I wonder if, since it sounds to me like, I'm just going to sort of speak for you for a second and say that it seems like since you've been doing it for so long, or since you started doing it so quickly out of school, that it's kind of become, you know, pretty old hat to you. But I wonder if there have been periods where it's like, wow, I have, you know, I'm spending way too much time on this work, or, you know, or if you have ways of breaking up the day or that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like for a while it was like I would be, especially in Atlanta, I was, my studio was in my house.
Mm.
So it was a lot of like, am I actually working today?
Right.
Or am I just like looking at my computer, sitting in my studio and like watching the TV through the bookshelf?
Right.
Like, what am I actually doing here?
Uh-huh.
So I think like actually moving to New York, I have a part-time job at a gym here.
Mm-hmm.
That I actually enjoy, but it breaks up the week in a way that like I feel like when I'm in the studio, it's quality time and it's not just like,
right,
I've got all the time in the world.
Right.
You know? So
yeah, yeah.
It's actually way better to have something going on, but I feel like the other thing going on, you have to kind of enjoy it.
Yeah.
Whereas like Whole Foods was like just miserable and like, it was exhausting because you're on your feet all the time and people are just like angry around food. So, you know, like
yeah.
everyone's hungry and kind of mad at you for like not doing something right.
Right.
And at the gym, I work at this like gym really close to me, and it's like such a different environment because everyone's so thankful. They're like, thank
wow.
you so much, you know?
Right.
Even if like I just work at the desk, I don't even, you know, teach a class or anything, but they leave and they feel better. Whereas like at in a restaurant or, you know, around food, people just lose it, you know? Like
that was
they
the,
just lose their mind sometimes.
Was that the case at the at the restaurant where you were waiting tables too?
Yeah, and like because it was a late night thing, people just get really drunk and like, you know, it, I just like didn't really want that kind of extra stress or energy where
sure.
like people at the gym are like trying to do something better, at least like, you know, in some ways. So like there's a bit of gracious attitude.
Right.
At that point, you know, so
what are you doing at the gym exactly?
I just work at the desk.
Okay.
It's like a boutique type gym. So it's
right.
like a specialized gym. So it's one class and I just check people in and like deal with memberships and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's super easy and I don't have to like think about it when I leave and I get free classes. So
what classes do you take?
It's called Pure Bar, so it's like a bar type class. But I also like it because I can like not be an artist there. I
right.
can, you know, they have like no idea what I do, which is great. So I can kind of ignore it too for like the time that I'm there, which is very little.
I think it's really nice that because they already know you maybe as somebody who has a part time job there, right?
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say it's really nice, whatever it is, when you can be in an environment where people aren't going. So what do you do?
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, it's like, you know, you want someone to know that that's not like your life. It's like sitting at the gym desk.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, I don't really need everyone to know what I'm doing. Like, this is fine. Like, I don't need to prove myself here.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
Well, this has been fun. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. And
okay.
We're out. Thank you very much again to Shara for talking to us. And good to get a little Southern representation, such as it is, on the show. Hopefully we'll be getting more of that in the near future. Wanted to remind you, this is a listener-supported show. Please don't go away. You got to give me a couple minutes, right, before you shut off the sound, before you fast-forward to the next episode. Particularly just want to let you know, first of all, that I thank you very much for listening. I appreciate your tweets, your Instagrams, your Facebooks, and anything that you care to share on and give us a nice review on iTunes. But we are on the we're getting pretty close to more or less meeting our target for switching platforms. That is the hosting site. We want to switch over to Libsyn, and it's costing us about $750 total to do that. So asking you to give 10 or more dollars, it would be very much appreciated. You can do that by going to theconversationpod.com/support. And donations recently have ranged from artists such as Christina Weaver, who is in the South herself, an artist who said everyone can give a little. I sacrifice two mediocre lattes for hours of enlightening art talk. Worthy trade-off. I would say, need we say more, but also, you know, you have on the other end of the spectrum, Sarah Kane, very established, popular artist who gave a very generous donation knowing how difficult it is for podcasts to get off the ground. So thanks in advance for any support that you can lend. And thank you very much for your participation and feedback on the various social media platforms. I really appreciate it. I'm always responsive to your communique on any of those platforms. So I look forward to hearing from you, and I look forward to sharing an episode with you next week. Thank you very much for being here. Please spread the word about the show. Let other people know about it, including on iTunes. And I will talk to you next week. Ciao for now.